You are listening to Around Comics, episode 199. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by.
Hey, best comic store in Chicago, right?
Yeah, it was...
rated by Chicago Magazine.
Chicago Magazine, number one comic store in Chicago, which was... Well deserved.
A lot of dudes here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need some. A lot of dudes.
There's no. Wow. Yeah. Not. Yeah.
The dog girl.
The biggest breast.
Yes.
Coco
is a girl. I'm Chris. Welcome aboard, everyone. I am Christopher Niesman, and riding alongside this week is Mr. Tom Caters, back from assignment.
Hi. My assignment to move my girlfriend to Pittsburgh. Nothing to do with
mission accomplished.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. I'm engaged.
Way to go.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I think should wear a ring as well.
That really bothers me. I dropped a lot of money in that ring, and I don't get to wear anything around at all. And when we were hanging out in Pittsburgh, and she introduced me, she was still like, "This is my boyfriend."
Beyonce,
thank you.
I'm sorry. I didn't buy that ring so I could be the boyfriend.
That's a good point.
Fucking fiance. And I corrected her.
It's like, look at the
exactly.
ring.
No.
You didn't say you were her pimp daddy or anything
nothing like that. Pimp daddy. But it was wonderful. I asked her to marry me in Door County, a beautiful part of Wisconsin.
During a fish boil?
We went to a fish boil later in the day.
To celebrate?
Have you ever been to a fish boil?
No. My parents love them.
Before we get into comic books, I should explain what a fish boil is.
It's not a zit on a fish's ass?
No, what they do is they build a giant... This is a Wisconsin thing, and being from Wisconsin, this gets my blood boiling when I see this happen. But what they do is they build a giant bonfire. They have a giant kettle, and they have like a Chinese nesting doll style like buckets that they put into this cauldron of boiling water, along with maybe 2 to 3 pounds of salt. You put a lot of salt in there. So what happens is you put down your potatoes, you put down your onions, then you just drop in a bunch of fish, and you put potatoes on top. So what you get with your fish boil meal is boiled fish with bones in it, so watch out. A whole boiled onion. Have you ever had a boiled onion?
No.
Nah, it's not that good. It's not the best way to eat an onion. And then a couple potatoes. It's real.
Hillary is entertaining the dog over here.
It's real plain Wisconsin food.
Mm-hmm. Comes
but
with
it was
beer.
Romantic. Well, yeah. Well, you're already drunk because you're just hanging around. But it was magical.
It was magical. Awesome.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I put the ring inside a piece of fish.
Oh, it's a bone.
Honey, don't choke. No, honey, it's not a bone.
Originally, an old woman ate it. Which was uncomfortable, so I had to put everything off a day, and then we had to tail that old woman, which was uncomfortable.
Give her castor oil to have her shit the ring out, basically.
Did you kill her in a sprint mine and remove the ring from her?
Yeah, well, we killed her. We waited 12
even better.
Hours.
Gutted her like a fish.
She had a good life.
When you killed her, did you count the rings?
Yeah, I cut her. She was 112 years old.
All right, the rest of the panel. Let's get to this. The artist of Nixon's Pals and other comic-y goodness, Mr. Chris Burnham.
Hey now.
What else are you working on these days?
Where's the ding bell? I want to plug the next thing.
Oh shit.
Hey, Hillary, can you grab the Burnham Bell?
Purchase X-Men Manifest Destiny number 1 on September 3rd, I think.
I can't point that far out.
Hey, that's like 2 weeks from now. So by the time this airs, it'll be like the day.
All right.
Yeah.
X-Men Manifest Destiny number 1.
Yeah. Sweet.
There you go. Mr. John Suntress, the voice of Word Balloon.
Meanwhile, in the Justice League, down at the Hall of Doom.
Ted Knight over here.
Yes. Good evening.
Was he your favorite narrator for...
Well, I had no choice if you liked your Filmation DC. I mean, he was the only guy. Meanwhile, and the Hawkman.
I think... No, he was the second one.
No, he goes back to the 60s, bud. Trust me on that.
Was Ted Knight the only narrator for Super Friends?
There might have been a second one in the later, after his Mary Tyler Moore years, but like even before Super Friends, mm-hmm. when they had the original DC shorts that they would run during the Superman Aquaman hour,
yeah,
they were always
it was all Ted Knight,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The Flash, fastest man on Earth.
I thought there was two of them.
Yeah, I greatly preferred the newer guy who didn't sound quite so, you know,
Ted
dead.
Knight.
Yeah,
he was, pretty much was like, I'm reading my laundry list. What else do I have to do? All right.
The second guy was more like, it's like Flash or whatever.
Yeah, Jeffrey Brown was the host.
I don't know, maybe they should.
Then he got that call from Jim Brooks and Mary Tyler Moore and said, you could be our newsman. Good, I don't have to do this crap anymore.
Meanwhile, in Minneapolis.
Lou. You're like a Fresca Aquaman?
Help me, Lou.
And finishing out the round table it's rough, isn't it?
Do you have any voices?
I have no voices.
one of our longtime friends of the program and all around good guy
and
the,
low talker.
I keep turning you up.
Oh really?
The artist of Athena Voltaire and other upcoming Ape Comics goodness, Ursula Wilde, and other projects, which we'll hear all about, hopefully.
Are you going to do any right?
If I get the bell, I'll tell you about it.
And the Canterville Ghost.
There you go. Yes.
Mr. Steve Bryant.
Should do a submarine that's piloted by a dude comic. It's like the opposite of what you normally do.
Can you be more phallic?
Yes. I didn't even realize.
And call him a red torpedo.
A colossal penis.
Yeah. A submarine with like two giant wheels at the back.
Captain Dick.
Meanwhile, on the submarine, Captain Dick and his crew went off in search for the big gaping hole undersea.
That's gross.
Well, you know.
John.
Who writes this crap?
This is a family show, John.
I'm sorry, what?
It wouldn't be his crew. It would be his seamen.
That's true. And his seamen.
In the submarine.
See, you're right about that.
There you go.
All right, everyone.
Hey there, folks. I want to break in for just a moment because we've got a big announcement for Around Comics listeners and comic book fans in the Chicago area. On October 25th, Around Comics is proud to present the Windy City Comic Con. This one-day event will bring together the best comic book retailers, publishers, and creators in the Midwest. Join us on October 25th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Center on Halsted. It's just two blocks from Wrigley Field in the heart of Chicago's Wrigleyville neighborhood. The area's best retailers will be offering great deals on new issues, collected editions, statues, games, apparel, and tons, literally tons, of back issues. The Windy City Comic Con's huge gaming area will host both Magic and HeroClix tournaments, with players competing for rare limited edition prizes. And creators, you ask? Oh, we've got creators. Meet some of the Midwest's best talent, including Mike Norton, Scotty Young, Chris Burnham, Will Pfeiffer, Rich Kozlowski, Hillary Barda, Steve Bryant, Pat Loika, Jeffrey Brown, Tim Seeley, and many, many more. Book your plans now to attend the Windy City Comic Con on October 25th at the Center on Halsted. For a full list of exhibitors, guests, gaming schedules, and programming, go to www.windycitycomiccon.com. That's Comic-Con spelled comiccon.com. The Windy City Comic Con, Chicago's only comic book convention.
Moving on here, this is our every other week, what have you been reading episode, and we've kind of opened things up over the last month or so to not technically have a top of the stack, but this is basically your favorite comics. But
someone else trademarked that, so
yeah.
Did they really?
It's tied up.
There's
tied
a sandwich shop in Texas that has a top of the stack sandwich. And
I've been selling these things since '73, and these comic book guys stole my bit.
Yeah, they got more money than that.
Son of a.
Yeah.
So I tell you what, we will still go with tradition. Mr. Tom Caters, what is your not top of the stack?
Yeah, it's wrapped up in litigation. My favorite book I got this week was actually one I just randomly picked up from the cover because the cover looked awesome. It was Superman Batman number 51, featuring a cover by Ryan Suk.
Love Ryan Suk.
Written by Michael Green and Mike Johnson with art by Raphael Albuquerque. I think that's how you pronounce that. It looks like the city, Albuquerque, so I don't see why. It is a laugh riot. I laughed quite hard at it. The whole premise of the issue...
Can I butt in and say that I am just absolutely shocked that Superman Batman has made a top of the stack appearance.
It was awesome. I laughed out loud.
I can't wait to hear this.
What happens is we open with this issue with we see Superman and Batman leaping into action to save people, but then we see that it's really just like tiny child-sized versions of Superman and Batman. And what's happened is somehow from another parallel Earth, these tiny childlike versions of Batman and Superman have come to the DC universe and they've run into Batman and Superman. And the real humor comes into the fact that they are kitty versions of them. Like, in their world, they never get hurt. When one of them is Batman's attacked by, the tiny Batman's attacked by a Floronic Man, he's like, "What is this feeling?" And it's like pain. And then Superman goes to punch, the little Superman goes to punch someone, gets hit against a wall, and he's like, "I don't understand what's going on." And then the real ones show up, and you know, you see this sort of interaction going on, and you see that on this other Earth that these little versions came from, it's like this really funny version, this kid version of the DC Universe. You know, little Power Batman Puff became Batman because he saw his parents get shoved when they were leaving a movie theater. And it's great because there's a panel of him, little, even littler Batman, and his dad, who just looks like a kid, but he has a mustache, getting shoved by like, this mugger.
Like
in front of him. Yeah. And, the line is, two shoves and the whole world changed. You know, and then Superman, little Superman, came to Earth because Krypton got a rainstorm. And since they like the sun, they send him to a planet where there was more sun. So it's all these like really funny little versions. Then you have to see really like the sort of grim and gritty Batman deal with like a kid version of himself, which is really funny because they're arguing. And at one point, the tiny Batman, who's also like tiny paranoid, goes, "Let's fight him." And he just yells kneecap and punches Batman in the kneecap. And then Batman kicks kid Batman in the face, like knocking him out. So you see like them have to interact with each other, and it's really,
it
pokes fun at sort of the iconic status of Batman and Superman, where Batman's super serious, and you see them in the Bat Cave, and little Batman's like, "Oh, his penny's bigger, his dinosaur is bigger." You see the rest of the little Justice League show up. And so it's like a tiny Flash, a tiny Vixen. They're all like, all the little girl versions are in love with Robin, and Alfred is like freaking out, and you know, he's like bringing sandwiches for everyone. It's really weird and really funny, and the art is really expressive and cartoony. And we all, you end
I'll
up
be
seeing
damned.
That Mr. Mexelpitlick. Mexelpitlick.
Mixie's Pitalick.
Pitalick.
Mixie's Pitalick.
Has brought them to
that's
this
my
Earth.
That's my geek
I
nerd
will
moment.
I do a third pronunciation. Mixie's Pitalick, but that's the one. That's the one I grew
Mr.
up with. So I don't know.
Mr.
Up to debate. Sorry. Jeff John's on line four.
He'll you should be able to pronounce that name.
Well, that's why there's the confusion.
Yeah,
of the
I think it should be like Mrs. Like you shouldn't be able to say it.
But anyway, he's brought the tiny versions, and at the end you see that he's also brought the little Injustice gang. So you see tiny versions of all the villains. And I can't wait to see what, like, little Joker's, like, origin is. You know, like...
So this is a multi...
It's a two-part story.
Oh, it's two-part story.
Got thrown into a vat
and
of oatmeal.
And I'm not doing justice explaining it, because there's lots of, like, little visual jokes in it as well. Just like the stuff with, like, there's that little kid Thomas Wayne with a mustache getting shoved by a mugger. You know, it's so sort of irreverent, which is funny when you think about where Superman Batman started with being, like, a very, like, tied in book to everything
oh,
else.
Oh, sure,
and
yeah.
It's funny and fun to see it.
Who wrote this again?
It is... Michael Green and Mike Johnson.
Michael Green's been the regular writer for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
Superman, Batman. He's one of the heroes.
Man, I gave up on that book a while ago, and it started out super, super good and just really kind of hit a lull for me.
Yeah, after the Loeb run, I have to admit there haven't been many arcs that have really kind of grabbed my attention. I remember reading Vance Skyver's arc, and now I'm blanking on who wrote that. But that's funny. I saw the cover. I assumed it was a Batmite Mixie's Pitlick story and didn't realize that it is the story you've described. But
Thomas Steve over here cracking up.
It's really funny. I laughed out loud. It's a really funny story. I mean, I think if you have, like, if you are humorless, you won't enjoy it. So if you're a comic fan, and I know you're out there who doesn't like anything involving Batman or Superman that isn't, like, reverential...
Ready.
and like the most serious. You're not gonna like this, but if you enjoy,
so this is not a Final Crisis tie-in.
No, this is. Oh well, it's great because Mr. Mixel Tiddler makes a joke about that where he's like, "Oh, it's always crisis this, crisis that." I thought it would bring something more fun for you to deal with. So it's all the little tiny versions of.
Nice.
Are they still doing Mixel Tiddler with the Derby and the? Oh yeah. No, you see, no, that's kind of the Silver Age one. I liked that they went back during Rucka's time. To the old Golden Age look from like McGurk.
It's also
and everything,
great that little red tornado looks like he's made out of like Lego blocks. So I mean, there's a lot of really great visual jokes in it, and
oh god, little cyborg Superman
in the middle of it, which seems kind of out of place. But that's
I picked it up based solely on the fact that I thought the cover looked really funny, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll pick it up. And then I read it, and I was on the train, and I actually laughed out loud with the part where little Batman is because of his parents got shoved, and I laughed. It was great. It completely surprised me.
Sweet.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Mr. Suntress?
One of the books that I read, and I read very few lately because I've been doing so many interviews lately, but Legion of Three Worlds was excellent. First issue came out. It's Jeff Johns, George Perez at their best, and Superboy Prime, and it's nice to see that it is Superboy Prime as opposed to Superman Prime that was kind of forced on us during Countdown. Mm-hmm. But it's great, and it's that consistent voice that I think has made Superboy Prime like the character and fan favorite that he's become, in just always looking
Do you think fan favorite is because I think this character cuts a little close to the bone for some people.
Yeah. I haven't heard anyone complain about him.
Oh, I've heard a few people complain.
Well,
because
the places I'm going to, everyone loves it and thinks it's hilarious. But yeah, I mean, he's found himself in the 30th century, helped to the 30th century by the Time Trapper, who clearly is going to be involved in this story. I don't want to give a lot away because, it is a great story, and especially Legion fans, I'm sure, have already bought this and are enjoying it. But
I read it, and I've read bits and pieces of Legion over the years. It's never, we've talked about this before. Whenever we were growing up, you kind of either became an X-Men fan or a Legion fan, and I was definitely in the X-Men camp, and so I never really read Legion. I've kind of picked up a few here and there, and it's very confusing, but if you haven't read the Legion before, don't shy away from this.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
It is laid out for you in a very entertaining, non-exposition type way.
Well, yeah, I mean, it starts with Superboy Prime in Smallville, the 31st century version of Smallville, and a Superman museum that really does lay out the history of...
It's done in a very clever way.
Yeah, and it is done in a clever way. So, no, I think people will be brought up to speed very quickly. And honestly, I'm not being, nice when I say I am a fan of all the various iterations of the Legion. I think
I only like their old costumes.
Well, at the end of the day...
I read them when I was a kid.
I don't know
where this is going to lead, but I really do hope that the Legion, the original Legion that Johns has seemed to favor and bring back in a bunch of recent stories, not only in this, but in the Lightning Saga and in Action Comics as well, that is my favorite Legion.
Did,
I'm hoping that...
Did they bring back another version of Karate
Grandma
Kid for Giffen to kill?
No, not yet, at least.
Oh, he's going to kill he needs to kill another Karate Kid.
Yeah, I think they've cleaned out all the Karate Kids from the kill, unless there's one coming up from the... other two legions that are going to be part of this book, but I know two of them are dead, so it'd have to be one if there is one left. But it looks
not
great.
Not for long. Giffen sharpening his knives.
You know, this first chapter really belonged to Superboy Prime, though, and that was great. That's what made it great. And it's again, he's such a funny point of view character, and it is that I'm in the stupid future, and just that hatred of the DCU that he has now kind of gotten. And I think makes for a very
how much do you
story.
Think Johns chuckles to himself
stupid
whenever he's
future.
Whenever
he's exactly
writing
it? But yeah, I know it. He loves this character, and that's why he was one of the guys too. I think during Countdown, who was like, "It's Superboy Prime, boys." But like forget about the Superman crap. He's Superboy Prime. He has to be. He has to be this petulant kind of
really
teen
like,
that really hates everything.
There's some
exists.
Really good humor in it too, like the part where he's flying through and the cop calls, and there's like a there's a half naked man flying through.
the
Legion Museum.
Is he a Legionnaire? And he's like, no. Some half naked man fan.
No, but, I'm just a big fan of that whole 31st century now.
Yeah, Perez continuity. And Perez still knocking it out of the park.
Yeah, you know,
Scott Koblish inks on that, by the way.
Yeah, and good compliment to Perez.
Scott, I know is a listener to the program, so.
Well done, Scott.
Way to go.
That's very cool.
Very nice.
Yeah, I think it's a great book, and it's everything that they had been hyping it to be in terms of you want to see George Perez doing, you know, dozens of characters. This is the book.
Drawing every character. I think George Perez, when he's done drawing all the superhero characters, is just going to get out a phone book and just start calling people up. What do you look like?
Send me a picture. I'll draw you.
I'm going to draw you. I'm drawing all the A's together. who's who of America, drawn by George
But
Perez?
We were talking earlier in the week, too. This is one of those Final Crisis tie-ins, and I'm really pleased to see how many of these tie-ins are genuinely entertaining and good.
You know,
I'm really glad to see that.
I don't even... I know this will funnel its way into Final Crisis in some way, but... I didn't read it as a Final Crisis tie-in.
Well, it's not yet, and who knows, maybe plans have changed since they decided to put everything under the Final Crisis umbrella, but all these mini-events...
books, my land.
Sure, like Final Crisis Revelation, really, rather than a Final Crisis tie-in, it felt like more of a continuation of Crime Bible and what's going on with Spectre.
But Greg told me in one of my interviews...
Greg who?
That'd be Greg Ruckusser. thank you.
Name drop.
Yeah, I know, sorry. But he did. He said that one of the... I asked him how important the Crime Bible story was to the events coming up, and he let an Easter egg out that in one of the Final Crisis books, Barry Allen will be holding the Crime Bible. So the Crime Bible is an important totem within the story of Final Crisis.
Libra, obviously, very tied into it, and, you know...
He's the apostle of the Crime Bible.
Exactly. You know, he's the prophet, and not even the power of the Spectre.
So that one, I think, does tie in. Pretty directly.
Steve is just like,
whoa. We'll all see what happens.
I'm still trying to figure out how somebody lets an Easter egg out. I don't know if he's sitting in a little bit.
He winced when he
was coloring it. He was coloring it.
Jen was ready with the salve. Everything was okay.
Did he cluck?
No, it turned out okay.
Chris wants that egg.
How much
to buy that Greg Rucka Easter egg you have?
I've got a perfect place on my mantle for it.
I'm saving a spot.
One of my I did a Queen and Country on one of my comic shots and articles over at iFanboy, and okay. I took a picture of the martini that I featured for that. It was a Vesper, which is the James Bond martini, and I took a picture of that on my shelf with all my Queen and Country trades and hardcovers. Yeah. I got so many emails of people. It's like, nice Greg Rucka shrine. Like, you should have
seen the jar of skin.
Yeah.
You should have seen it before I took
the
candles down.
These are toenails that Greg clipped as he was writing.
Is he, like, stitching together a Greg Rucka suit? Like
a
in
suit.
He's collecting DNA. He's going to clone his own Rucka.
He writes his own Queen and Country fan fiction while wearing the Greg Rucka suit. Click, 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 click.
As long as it's not slash fic, I think you're okay.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Brian.
There's elements of slash
fic. First of all, man, it's good to see you.
It's good to see you. We're shaking hands.
We're shaking hands right now.
That's the visual.
Yeah.
And that's not a euphemism. Just to let you know.
Steve lives just a couple hours away downstate, and we talk all the time and email back and forth, but it's really awesome whenever you're able to make it up to the city of broad shoulders and spend some time with us.
Well, it's fun to not be like on a shitty little cell connection too. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Terrible.
You know, all that stuff. I don't have the book in front of me, so I'm going to have to wing it. I've been late on going to the comic shop for a while, so.
Why?
I'm working.
All right, that's all I wanted. I'm sorry.
Should the response be, I don't read comics, man?
I don't read comics. Comics are for children. Look at all these grown men in this.
Did you notice that Mark had Flight of the Falcon Volume
2
up front?
And he has two shelf copies, which I even thanked him for that, because I know it's tough for a store to be able to carry like indie books to just sell off the rack, let alone indie trades.
Look at this shop, man. So we got a good shop here.
Best shop in Chicago.
You got it.
So there you go.
Yeah. What is it? Time Out Chicago says that, or Chicago Magazine?
I think it's called Windy City Magazine.
Windy City Comic Con.
So what are you reading, my man?
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Tell us.
Bring us right
I didn't
back
have
to
a
the
chance
point.
To talk to him before we started recording.
Hellboy, the Crooked Man, written by Mike Mignola, drawn by Richard Corbin.
Very cool.
And
there's a shocker.
Yeah.
The ultimate Mike Mignola fan over here.
What does Corbin's Hellboy look like? That's really interesting.
It's good.
Looks awesome.
Now, see, he also had done the Makoma.
Oh,
the,
okay.
Was it a one-shot or a two-parter from, like, 3 years ago?
Yeah, it's like a two-shot, I think. Two-shot. Boom, boom. Yeah.
I love Corbin's paintings, but I've always been kind of hit and miss with his ink stuff, which right now Vince B. and Jim Nelson are, like, crapping themselves because, you know, that's sacrilege.
You besmirch Corbin.
What?
His Hellboy is really cool and really appropriate, and... Okay. I mean, it's kind of that whole backwoods type of feel.
It's a perfect fit for the story that they're telling.
Oh, it's creepy as hell.
It's, what, 1950s Appalachians?
Yeah. I can't remember the author. Was it Manly Wade Wellman? Wrote a lot of, like, horror type of stuff that took place in the Appalachian region and stuff like that. I'm
pretty
sure.
Can be a scary place.
Well, yeah. But I'm pretty sure that's like a
lot of chicken bones.
It's like a one of the influences
voodoo
on Mignola,
stuff.
I thought.
Yeah,
I had
but
read.
like hick voodoo stuff, redneck hick voodoo.
Steve,
as opposed to like blue collar.
We're not gonna go down this path.
Hick voodoo.
That's the name of my new band. We're gonna.
I was
gonna
say that's my new comic book that I've been working on. Hick voodoo.
It's called Hick Voodoo.
But
is the Crooked Man? That's a two-part one again, right?
It's three.
It's a three-part.
One and two are out now. I think two came out either this week or last.
Two weeks ago.
Okay, so I'm just not current enough. But
that's fine.
That just absolutely kicked my
ass. This will come out in like two or three weeks after we've listened talked anyway.
Yeah,
so
we're way ahead on episodes right now.
Great.
So this comes out sometime in 2009.
So yeah. Hellboy, the Crooked Man number three is what I just picked out. And it's really good. And I didn't see the end coming.
Did you see the movie? Hellboy 2?
Hellboy Crooked Man?
No, 2.
Yes.
Hellboy 2.
Yes, I did.
And?
I really liked it.
I really liked it, too.
It deviates from, you know, what Mignola's doing, but I didn't mind at all, and I mean, visually it was just gorgeous.
Yeah,
of course.
You mean someone made a movie about a book and it was different, and it didn't destroy all the copies of the book?
No, it didn't.
Mine actually burst into flame as I was watching.
And
it burned all
the awesome
them.
Animated features also remained intact.
But I would argue that
you can have multiple versions.
The internet
I would argue
still
that
in one piece.
That the animated Hellboy is closer to the comic book.
Oh yeah.
Oh sure.
But. Each one, you know,
they're
does
great.
Their own thing,
oh,
and,
yeah.
and it's just awesome. So
it's so nice to hear him.
Oh yeah,
and, I mean, he did. You know, obviously, David Hyde Pierce is incredibly cool for stepping aside, and you know, and everyone is finally realizing that Doug Jones should be playing Abe Sapien completely. And did a great job. I thought his acting was really good.
I just want to hear more David Hyde Pierce on Amazing Screw Off Head. Or Amazing Screw-On Head.
Screw-Off!
That's a sequel.
Hey, you jag-off!
That's the Hick voodoo. Well,
did you guys see that thing?
Yes.
Well, yeah,
that thing was
a
fucking atrocity.
His best line in there is, it's nothing but an old piece of crap!
No,
I love that. By the way, that's the greatest single comic book of all time, is the Amazing Screw-On
Head. That is absolutely true.
That's just
fucking
hilarious. I think my favorite line was, let's spark one up.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, you know who produced Screw on Head? It was Brian Fuller of Wonderfalls and Pushing Daisies.
And Heroes,
yeah.
Huh.
And I think they were just trying too hard to get the Mignola look to it.
Yeah, I think they completely missed on all points. Like, because half of it was
you
traced.
You didn't like Giamatti?
What?
Half of the artwork was traced, and the other half, they were clearly trying to do it, and I mean, I've read that comic 1,000 times, and I could, you know, clearly point out the parts that were actually, you know, Mignola or Mignola Trace, and then, you know, they've got these, you know, Koreans or whatever trying their damnedest to draw like Mignola, and,
yeah, man, red, white, and blue! It was like a run.
That's my Hick voodoo, man.
It was like a bad cover song, like, come to life. I had to turn it off 5 minutes in.
Really? My band Hick Voodoo just plays bad cover songs. Just to let you know.
Bad Korean cover songs.
Yes.
Bad Korean.
Ska version.
Bad Korean ska.
Yeah.
What is the
sour kimchi? No, with Mignola, though, you've also got in the Mignola-verse, BPRD 1947 is coming out with Gabriel
Ba.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I didn't know about that.
It's Ba and Moon.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's Ba and Moon doing it.
And Josh Dysart's writing it.
They say Dysart and Mignola, and I think that, you know, I don't know for sure, but you would talk to Josh. What was their kind of creative process? Were they writing that together, or was Mignola kind of just helping plotting, and then...
The kind of vibe I got from it, and I could be completely wrong, was that Mignola was just sort of there to keep tone consistency,
right,
and that
mm-hmm.
Josh had a lot of say in, like, what goes on, you know, in the books, and that it might be co-plotting. I don't think Mignola is doing, like,
the
any scripting.
That's probably been my favorite miniseries of the last year. I thought.
Well,
I've
not read a lot of the recent Hellboy stuff. Not for a lack of good art. I think I've said this before. I find some of the Hellboy stuff to be a little sort of wandering as far as story-wise at
mm-hmm.
times. Like, the art is really good, but the story can be kind of hard to pin down exactly what... this, actually, Crooked Man sounds a lot more like something I would like, because it's... the Hellboy stories I get more lost on are the ones where it's sort of him having, like, visions, or he's not,
When you deal with the Beast of the Apocalypse type of stuff...
Yeah, and all of a sudden there's no context to where you are overall in the Hellboy story. I think it's really hard to, like, latch onto something if you don't have that tether to either other characters or a time period,
yeah,
which I think really helps BPRD to have... And I've said this: have characters interact.
Right,
makes it easier to keep you locked in
mm-hmm.
to, like, the thread of the story. Like, I forget what Hellboy series. It was one of the more recent ones where I just sort of lost track of what was going on, because it was him, like, dealing with, you know, like, some Beast of the Apocalypse. But
was it Darkness Calls?
Yeah,
because that was 5 issues, and I mean, I loved it, but
yeah.
The last time we saw a 5-part Hellboy was Wake the Devil, and
yeah.
when it gets sweeping and epic, I can see how that can
all
be
sudden,
daunting to the non-uber geek.
Yeah, especially when he's not interacting with other characters that you know,
right.
and he just seems to be in this thing that doesn't seem to tie into the whole thread until you get to the end, and all of a sudden you're like 3 issues in, and I was reading and I was like, I have no idea
what's going on
right.
in this story, you know, like. So, what you're describing Crooked Man as being probably more to, like, my taste is at least having, a time context to, like...
I mean, he's still kind of doing the David Carradine walking the earth kind of thing,
yeah.
but this is much earlier, I mean, this takes place in the 50s. But, you know, do you think we're going to see a point in time where Hellboy's going to come back in the BPRD? It almost feels like we're in...
Didn't someone ask him that in San Diego?
No, I don't think so, actually.
I don't...
And... He said the answer to that was complicated or something?
Well, it just seems like...
Google this one, folks.
I think he wants Hellboy on the Earthwalk and everything, and kind of searching and everything, and I think BPRD is now its own entity.
Well,
and that's okay, and I
still like BPRD.
Oh, yeah.
I still like BPRD.
Oh,
I still like...
Davis
I like the stories, and I like the standalone Hellboy stories, but there's still something about getting the band back together,
oh, yeah.
and I miss... Hellboy.
It'll happen someday. I think it'll happen where he gets into a story and he's like, yeah, why not? Let's just do a story where Hellboy and
comes back.
Right now, I know he just seems to be into really delving into as many different mythologies and source mythologies.
Well,
I'm
impressed by how there always seems to be a BPRD Hellboy product out for you to buy.
But the tone is
consistent.
It all feels like him. And next month, I think it's September, we've got him coming back to write and draw a one-shot as well.
Yeah.
September, October. Mike Mignola's doing a Hellboy one-shot.
Oh, Hellboy one-shot, yeah.
And that'll
wait.
Be cool.
Yeah, I'm stoked for that.
And Nolan's doing something.
He's just inking the covers, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. How about that Lobster Johnson series, too?
Oh,
that,
yeah.
was that was excellent.
Available in trade now.
Yes.
So.
I recently reread all the BPRD stuff from the Ryan Sook stuff on, like, in a big... And it really starts building on itself and really starts...
Oh, yeah.
Like, 2 issues ago, I kind of had forgotten what the hell... Like, who's that guy with a weird beard who's been giving, you know, Liz the dreams? I kind of forgot all that stuff.
Anything.
And I read it all together, and the Lobster Johnson thing ties in really interestingly with the BPRD stuff. It's fucking awesome.
I've been thinking about doing a library binding. You know, everyone talks about, you know, it's
kind of this thing where you can send your comics off and get them bound into hardcover. I'm like, okay, I want to do this, but I don't know what I want to have hardbound. I was going to do Gotham Central, but now they're coming out with those in hardcovers. I'm thinking about starting to do all the BPRD in order and doing those as bound editions, because I think they will read extremely well as volumes like that.
Like Steve said, they're so consistent in tone completely. Well,
and I think some of that is like the unsung hero who we haven't mentioned is Dave Stewart.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The colors.
All the,
sure. That
all
guy
the
is
colors,
a ninja.
Oh, he's the best.
It's amazing stuff.
It all looks, you know, color scheme-wise.
Yeah.
Pretty. Someone else did the Ectoplasmic Man. Was it Val Staples who did that one? But I was really impressed by the fact that even though they brought someone else in, that it was very much the same Dave Stewart like vibe to the colors.
I wonder if they sent him some TIFFs and he used his eyedropper tool
to get that palette
and the brush. Yeah.
But I like Val Staples as a she does.
I think
it's a man. Is it a man? Okay, I lived with a girl named Val, so I always think Val are women.
Well, just like that one chick that draws that Hillary Barta.
Hillary Barta.
I hear Hillary Barta is hot.
You know, actually,
he's not even around.
Maybe we'll save this for next week. But we do have Jason Molloy is here, and he is a fantastic colorist. We haven't really talked about colors that much.
They don't do a whole lot.
Are they really necessary? Do they really matter?
Yeah, some of these guys don't do like five or six, you know, issues a month.
Don't even get me started on Inkers.
Oh,
that's crazy.
Oh, me?
I just threw you off.
Speaking of Val Staples, here's something that Val Staples has worked on. I do this little column over at iFanboy on Thursdays.
Fucking cross-promotion.
I am cross-promoting, baby.
If I'm a name dropper, exactly. There's your pitch man right
there. Hey, and I'm on
Tom Cater Salsa.
And I'm on 11 o'clock comics every Thursday or Friday, whenever that comes out. 2 weeks ago, I guess, as this comes out, I did an article on Brit.
We're lost in time. We don't know where anything is.
I don't know when this is coming out. But
Kirkman.
Brit is part of the Kirkman Invinciverse.
Who?
That Robert Kirkman.
What?
We're not talking about Robert Kirkman. We're talking about one of Robert Kirkman's
books. I'm just talking about Shaft.
Here. About
Shaft. Loved the original Brit one-shots that Kirkman did years ago.
Came out in 2003, Robert Kirkman written three, I believe.
Yes.
It was three. Robert Kirkman wrote them. Tony Moore drew them. They were black and white or probably grayscaled. I didn't read the original ones. Those are all now available in a Brit Volume 1 called Old Soldier, and they have been gloriously colored by Val Staples, so they're all in full color now. And Brit basically is kind of just a tank. He's a guy he's indestructible.
Is he British?
He is not British, and that is something that confused me a little bit. I thought he was. I assumed that he was British, but his.
So you liked it immediately?
Yes, I was like, ooh, Brit. This
ooh,
must
awesome.
Be good.
Oh, it's supposed to be good.
His name is Brit. Is short for Brittany.
So he's a woman.
I'd go by Brit, too.
No, certainly not a woman. Think if Lee Marvin were given the Super Soldier formula back in 41 instead of Steve Rogers.
That is a great way to describe it.
It's British woman? I don't understand.
No, not that Lee Marvin.
But really, his only superpower is that he is indestructible.
It's he doesn't have super strength or, you know, laser beams or whatnot. I mean,
no,
he's just two-fisted man of action, but he's completely indestructible. And so he more than anything takes a licking and keeps on ticking and will just wear people down until
stiff upper lip.
Very stiff upper lip.
He's also with a guy who keeps punching him and breaks all his fingers and his wrist snapped.
Yeah, there's this guy who's like powered by solar energy or whatnot.
Superman?
And kind of a Japanese Superman super villain, and Britt just kind of takes a beating until the guy like runs out of juice, and then Britt just cracks his neck. He just wears him down.
Japanese versus the British, we win either way, man.
Britt,
not those damn French.
He's very much a lunch pail type guy.
Hard hat
guy. And I think that he's a hard hat guy. And I think that Sal has talked about Britt on the show before. It's just fun, you know, man of action stuff. You throw this guy into the middle of a battle and he can't get hurt, so eventually he's gonna just wear everybody down, and that's exactly what he does. But there's this whole other side of his life, which is what Kirkman is so good at doing, is that you have the great action and the quirky humor and all the neat little references, but he has this other life away from being this government agent that is kind of the first guy into battle. And that is, you know, he dates a 20-something stripper, is his girlfriend, and they're which, as kind of like dirty old man as that sounds, they are deeply, deeply in love with each other, and it is one of the truer romances that you read in comics. It feels very real, his life away from this. And Kirkman is very good at these great character moments in between these great action scenes.
Now, it usually seems to me, 5, 6, 7 issues in on mm-hmm. a Kirkman book, he'll establish the status quo, he'll play with an archetype you're familiar with,
yep,
and then he'll hit you with a change-up. And don't spoil any change-ups, of course, because there's a good one in like every one of his books. Mm-hmm. Is that part of his formula for this?
This is a little different because, like I said, this started in 2003 as three one-shots, and then the series has been relaunched, and it's coming out monthly now, but it's now written by Bruce Brown, and Andy Kuhn and Cliff Rathburn are doing art instead of Kirkman writing and Tony Moore on art. And so you have the three one-shots, which really set up the character and the continuity in this universe, which all exists in the Invincible universe. But now that the ongoing series is moving along, now they're starting to build up more continuity. And yeah, you get these great switches in character. And so, yeah, it's heading towards that. I don't know what's
British.
Yet.
Well, what I find interesting is we just spent 10 minutes talking.
I nailed it, Kirkman. I got
10 minutes talking about Mignola and the Hellboy universe, and Kirkman is doing essentially the same kind of thing with Invincible and Britt, and
Astounding Wolfman,
and the girl from Invincible who had
Adam
the one
Adam Eve.
Yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Ferber.
Yeah, the nobles are a part of it, and Dynamo 5. I mean, there is this awesome corner of the Image catalog that has its own kind. It really does. Not that it parallels, but there are certainly some. Comparisons to the early Marvel years, where you had each character or group, like the FF or Spider-Man or Hulk or whatever, had their own books, but they would occasionally cross over.
Thankfully, not everyone complains about their lives so much.
But, well, what's fascinating about the way that grew, though, it grew organically instead of...
Although they tried to force it a couple times.
And that's where it doesn't work. But once they let go of that, it seems like they just let it develop, and suddenly, how many people have launched superhero universes, and you just get
Valiant.
So many of these, you know, publishers,
which was awesome,
that I'm not mentioning anyone's names, but it just seems like here's this huge interlocking universe, and here it is all in front of you, and we're going to hit you with X number of books, and here's the world. And that's not the way the Marvel stuff developed. That's not the way the DC stuff developed. And it seems like once they stop trying
it just happens.
And it just happens. You get this nice little
tapestry developing.
Well,
this is kind of what's
happening.
The funny
thing is, back in the day, continuity was something that fans made.
Yeah.
fans made up.
Or demanded it.
Fans were the ones that were piecing together everything. Like, it wasn't some master plan from, like, creators to be. Because that makes their jobs fucking harder.
Barry Allen was reading a Flash comic when he got his powers. But he met the, you know.
Yeah,
and it's
a fan, people that are interested in the stories develop their own idea of how, you know, all this stuff. If you're creating something, I think there's a natural tendency not to make it more complicated, unless you're a company that decides to make it complicated immediately, which is where you fail. But it's a fan-based thing where fans demand it, fans create it, fans create the whole thing with the no prizes, the whole thing with, like, picking all that stuff up. That's a fan thing become
fanatic,
and they're the ones all of a sudden start focusing on how everything ties together. And in your mind, you're the one who ties everything together. You don't need it all laid out for you. You figure out in your own head how you want to piece that together. Because it doesn't make sense. Like, if you laid out for somebody the entire history of Spider-Man, it doesn't make sense.
No. How many Christmas stories has he had?
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense. Some? How many times have they mentioned the year? In an issue, you know, like it doesn't. That's a fan. That's something that you, because you're a fan and you want to enjoy the story.
So you're saying he never actually went to a sock hop.
I am saying that he went to a sock hop, but it was a retro sock hop.
Well played, sir. Well played.
That's the type of shit I'm like.
Blowing my mind, man.
Well, you just got a no prize.
All right, no, just
tell him what he won,
prize.
Stan.
I'm glad you asked, true believer.
I think in the Image Invinciverse, which really kind of has ties to Savage Dragon, if you want to really be fanatic about
it's
it.
So it's so loose, though, too.
It's very loose, but I think it's built up very organically. It's a matter of, you know, Jay Ferber calling Kirkman and saying, hey, I'm doing, you know, Firebirds, another Firebirds one shot. Is it okay if I have Invincible in a scene or a flyby
and
that
kind of
stuff?
And it's not like he kills Invincible in it.
No.
He's like Kenny in South Park.
By the way, I killed Invincible.
Like in Noble Causes, there's I know that there's one scene where there is a huge battle against some, you know, giant monster, which in the Noble Causes way of things is just kind of a cut in between scenes of what's going on in the personal one, in the soap opera of it. But in that scene,
you see
Dynamo and you see Invincible and Savage.
I've seen Al Guy back when he was it was a flashback. I remember seeing in one of those early reboots of the Noble Causes. Now that they pushed the story 5 years ahead,
And they actually tie that scene together. But it is this very organic, fun sharing of characters, which they all exist in this world, but it's not this fanatic,
it's totally,
you know,
loose.
Tying together.
Right. I loved in the Invincible. I don't remember when it was. They were fighting some Mole Man knockoff or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a half-page ad for all the other superhero, you know, all the other books.
Yeah.
Like, written into the story. Like, it, you know, showcases Savage Dragon signing somewhere. It's like, read Savage Dragon every month.
Astounding Wolfman.
Yeah, it was great.
Sad totally sidebar fun. About the Fairbear universe. Noble Cause is wrapping up.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
From what I saw from Jay's talk on CBR, it sounded like he was kind of, you know, done with those characters.
Well, what can he do? I mean, I can understand that.
He's been writing Noble Causes for 8 years.
And he's got a
7 years?
Kind of had to end already.
He and the artist.
Then he brought it back.
It's ended like three times.
And he and the artist are still collaborating on a follow-up project that you said in that same interview.
Yeah,
so
it wouldn't surprise me if we see it.
And I know he's excited about his newer stuff, and I'm glad Dynamo 5 is doing well, and I like Gemini a lot. I think that's a really neat book.
Sure.
More dodges bullets.
Steve, I tell him that every time I tell him. Every time I tell him. That was like that little detective throwaway he did for Moonstone? No, for Image.
It was Image.
Yeah, I know Moonstone had talked potentially about bringing more Dodgers bullets, but yeah, great little detective story that Jay never followed up.
If you have a chance, pick up the Firebirds one-shot. That was a fun little story.
No, I'm just being
you didn't like it?
I'm just being obstinate, that's all. No, sure. I'm sure it was great.
It was
for
good.
You.
Does
it
Jack
good.
Staff ever show up in any of those stories?
He hasn't, but I feel like
he should.
I feel like he's got to. Although Jack Staff kind of that is my top ish of the sack or whatever.
Wait,
that's what I've been reading a lot of.
Is he British?
He is British.
What's the giveaway there?
to wear it. Staff has an E in it.
He's got the British staff. yeah, Jack Staff. I've been reading it a lot, and it's kind of... It's a bit of an acquired taste, I guess, but I...
It takes a little while to get into it.
But I want it all. It's the cool thing I like about it. I like comics with a lot of subplots, just, you know, keeps your your brain bouncing back and forth. And there's, like, from the first issue of Jack Staff, it's... There's so many characters and so many teams, and so each issue, and it's like a full 30 pages of content every issue, there's, like, 8 to 10 short stories featuring all these characters, and you're... tossed right into the middle, and it kind of treats them as though you've already read stories about them. And it does like a little, you know, one page or like half a page recap in every issue that like ties, like yanks you right into the story. And it becomes a mantra, kind of.
If you ever read them in the trades, it's really weird to read them because sometimes it's hard to tell where the breaks are, because all of a sudden he'll just throw in like a weird recap in a sort of a weird way, like right in the middle. But it's really good, and it doesn't, it takes a little while to get into the rhythm of how he's telling the story, but it's very sort of like machine gun like it's like bam bam bam, like bam bam bam, you get all this fast stuff, and all of a sudden you have a recap, and you slow down for a second, and all of a sudden you get all this stuff all of a sudden again. And he doesn't like mince words or take a lot of time.
Right.
It just keeps that story rolling. So
this has been coming out for a while, because I just opened it up and this is from Image, and Jim Valentino was the publisher. This has been around.
It took a break for a while, and then it just came back.
Yeah, it's monthly now. It's great, and there's a lot of part of the deal with Jack Staff is he's been around for quite some time, at least since World War II, and so a lot of the stories are like told in parallel. Like there's an adventure of him and the allies or whatever, you know, fighting the Nazis in the 40s, and then, you know, it's told in parallel with a story that's happening now, and sometimes they relate, and there's all these other little stories, and sometimes they all, you know, add up to each other, and sometimes they keep to themselves, and it's really interesting to read it, because you really don't know where the stories are going, because it's just, it's fucking batshit, man.
And there's a lot of great... Steve just pointed out the Alan Moore sort of joke. There's a lot of comic book parody. There's a lot, but it's mixed into just adventure.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't get too hung up. It's not too tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
It's just sort of points out sort of there's vampires, there's Captain America type characters.
Yeah.
You know, it's all this great comics history type
stuff. This way, another book.
Is it Paul Grist or Grist?
Grist?
I don't know.
I've always heard of Grist.
I loved his Kane.
That's what I was going to ask about.
Yeah, and producing Chris, you'd love that too, by
Kane
the way.
Kane hasn't come out in a while.
Yeah, okay. Kane is excellent. It's a series of police procedural.
Y'all are killing my pocket.
They're great crime graphic novels, man.
Cool.
And there's at least 5 or 6 or maybe even 7 of them.
I've been reading. I read Jack Staff when I first started reading. I read it in trade, so I picked up the Everything Used to Be Black and White.
Yes, phenomenal. Yes.
That is an amazing book, because looking at his black and white art is just like, it's a revelation in how weirdly simple art can be sometimes.
Yeah. It's like even simpler than Toth somehow. It's really
there'll
cool.
be a scene
is
with
there
a
any
car
Jack Staff here?
Where there's a scene where there's a car on a dark road, and all it is two white squares on a black panel,
yeah,
but you know it's a car.
Well,
you know, it's so simple, but weirdly effective.
I've never asked Matt Kent of Top Shelf if he's got to be a Grist fan, because I see a lot of similarities.
Oh, there's a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and Pistol Whip and all that stuff. I mean, no, it's that simplicity that, you know, is deceiving, because it really is. It's a great... They're beautiful. It's beautiful art, but it looks very simple, and he does a lot with very little.
Phenomenal panel layouts, and he'll do this thing where you can tell that some things are in flashback without even noticing it. Like all the panels that have like an extra outline around it, those are the flashbacks,
really great.
And
you know,
he just lets you figure that out
for
yourself.
That ties into something that I wanted to mention. I read Air, that new Vertigo book.
Oh, yeah, G. Willow Wilson.
Here's the thing that bothers me, though. Something in that book, the same thing happened in Criminal once that really bothers me, is that when you have a visual medium and you can't get across to me that it's a flashback,
there's a problem.
There's a problem in your storytelling. Like whether, I remember it was a Criminal, it was one of the, when they did Volume 2 of Criminal, there was an issue where if you're already dealing with characters that are in a flashback and then you have a flashbacker, you know, an even further flashback, but you don't visually tell me that it's farther back, and it takes me a page to figure out, I get a little confused.
It becomes a point of trying to be too clever with...
Air had the same exact thing where there was a flashback that you could not tell. There was nothing, no, in a visual medium, which is something that Paul Gerst does fantastically, is he just adds just enough clue that you know that it's a flashback without having to say it's a flashback. Air, I read it, it's a two-thirds of it is a flashback. You wouldn't, there's no visual clue. There's nothing to tell you.
I really wanted to like that book.
Yeah.
And make those fucking panels rounded, right?
Yeah, do something. Let me know that it's a fucking... Change colors. Change, the background. That, give me something to go with.
Yeah, that's a chance to let your colorist do something.
It happened in the issue of Criminal. It was the only time, because they got really good after it. There was one where there was, it had boxers in it, which is, two-thirds of Criminal issues.
Oh, that was the one-shots.
The one at the beginning. Yeah, one where there was these scenes of flashbacks where I got really confused because it was a flashback and then an even farther flashback, and everyone still kind of looked the same, was still the same. And it took me a little while to figure out, this is a flashback. And that always bothers me in a story.
You're bitching about the color. You praised Val Staples a couple minutes ago. Now you're calling him out.
I don't know if it's his fault.
I think he's calling out the whole team.
Val Staples
put a fucking caption that says 1973.
Yeah, absolutely is. Yes.
I don't know if it's colors. I don't know if it's round the panel.
Right.
Some visual clue to tell me that we've now shifted.
B. Clay Moore had a good JSA classified Wildcat story.
That was, and the way they did that was great.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say. The flashbacks for that were done really well.
Quick, tell that girl to go ahead and buy Batman The Long Halloween. That's good.
Fuck that.
Well,
dude, Batman Year One. The hell with the Long Halloween.
Oh, Long Halloween's great though too. There's room in the shuffle.
I agree with you on.
I was oversold on the Long Halloween.
That's good. It's one of my favorite Batman stories.
I was sold on that being up there with Year One, and it's a goofy Batman story with pretensions.
The ending.
It's fun enough.
I'm sorry, but the murder mystery part to it has some holes to that.
Sorry, did I just sidetrack?
I'm looking at the books over there right now.
Yeah. Too far away.
Talk about good trade dress.
That happened in Marvel in the last couple
Mark
years. One was in Daredevil. And
the house trade dress.
We have two people talking at the same time.
I'd let's go for three.
I was just mentioning a couple other times that flashbacks have been done well recently. I thought Daredevil, Bendis' arc, when they had the guy before the Kingpin, the guy who was in charge of House Kitchen.
Oh, Silk?
No, Bolt, I think was his name. It started with a B. And it's called...
Brit.
Yeah, it's Brit. And there was almost a texture of the pixeled kind of the way they used to color comics.
The half-tones.
Yes. And then also...
Bendis
in Mighty Avengers just recently, when the Century and Doctor Doom and I forget the third... It was
Iron
Man. Yeah, when they went back to the 70s,
I think it's pretty easy to get
a
visual clue that it's a flashback.
Yeah.
I think Eric Larson does the halftone, halftoning the best. He actually taught me personally the halftoning effect. And
drop that name.
Yeah. And I'm
Did he make you take your shirt off?
I'm going to massage you while I'm showing you this. That'll be on mine.
Just my boxers. I kept my pants on. Took off the boxer. You know how girls can do, Flashdance, where they took off the bra? Yeah. I can do that with boxer shorts.
Interesting.
Weird. Maybe.
Nice.
But we will see at the Windy City Comic Con, apparently.
Right. Yes.
I got nothing.
Hey, announcement coming.
What's that?
He taught me the technique for the crack comics issue of the Next Issue Project, which I wrote and drew.
Oh, cool.
Space Legion story.
Will there be a next issue?
It is, yes.
Good.
God knows when Eric's going to get around to drawing it. Hint, hint.
Okay. Because,
I'm busting his balls.
I had heard that maybe there wouldn't be, and I was disappointed, so I hope that there will be another next issue.
Well, I've certainly done my six pages.
Those great stories. I think it's a great experiment, and I hope it continues.
All right. Well, I tell you it's probably time to start wrapping this one up.
Wrap you up.
Real quick, Steve Bryant, you're going to be back next week, but... real quick, you have anything coming out anytime soon that we need to be aware of?
In stores, probably by the time this airs, about 2 weeks ago, Athena Volterra, Flight of the Falcon trade paperback.
Yay! Mm-hmm.
Great.
And, at last we got our legal stuff worked out. we'll be doing a two-issue miniseries early 2009, and I think mid to late 2009, I've got an adaptation of an Oscar Wilde novella called The Canterville Ghost for Classical Comics.
Great, and best place online to find out all things Steve Bryant?
Scatlovers.com.
Oh, you found me there. Did you Google? AtomicTiki.blogspot.com.
All right, there you go. Mr. Burnham, once again, your X-Men story?
Manifest Destiny number one comes out early September, and I've got a story in Pop Gun Volume 3, which comes out...
Cool.
Who the fuck knows?
Pop Gun 3? You guys, wow, already working on that?
Yeah, I believe the deadline they gave me. I'm sure I was the first person to get the work done.
Good for you. All right, awesome. And check out Nixon's Pals, which sold out?
Nearly. There's a couple. There's some copies left.
Two or three copies.
Order now.
Get them now, Nixon's Pals.
And if you have them, put them on eBay and sell some of them.
There you go, yeah. In-stock Trades has it for super cheap.
You heard what I got for my Watchmen issues, right?
Yes, retarded, yeah.
What'd you get?
Yeah,
$202 and 57 cents.
Yeah, you just fuck someone over.
Yeah,
the Watchmen portfolios.
Hey, free shipping.
I'm disappointed in how little people are, you know, offering for those.
I'm still. Really
I was expecting godloads of money, but it's only like 50, 75 bucks.
Because everyone spent their money bidding on.
I have a Watchmen hotel key from San Diego Comic Con this last year. I'll be putting that on eBay.
Yeah, hold on to it until the movie. All right, I want to thank everyone who was kind enough to leave us an iTunes music review. It's a great way to help the show and help raise our visibility. Just head over to iTunes and leave us a review there, just like CD Jones, Zach is Rad, Joe, Jeff MG, Mini Thin, Glow in the Dark, Wise Blood, and D Balls McBoosh.
I love that guy.
D Ball
McBoosh.
He sat down, he made his iTunes profile and thought about his name and said, you know what? I'm going to go as D-Balls McBoosh.
Somebody
right
did
here.
It. Somebody did it.
Delete.
All right. Tom versus
yeah,
JLA. All
it's
done?
Over.
Yay.
Done.
Congratulations, man. That's good.
I don't really feel like I should be congratulated on. No one was trying to stop me. To fight anyone.
Now, let me get this straight.
Yeah.
Tom versus the Flash.
Yeah.
Still going to come out on Tom versus the JLA feat.
Yeah, because it would take too much work.
Okay, so stay subscribed. And that will switch over. Tom versus the Flash, starting with showcase number 4.
It's great. There's a scene right before Barry Allen gets hit with all the chemicals where he's in front of a bookshelf and says, here's a bookshelf with all the chemicals known to man, and it's like 50. It's like, that's it? That's all we know?
Boron hadn't been invented until then. We got a new thing called Crayon.
We have 50 of them? That's all we have?
Did you have to go to the safe deposit box to pull out your copy of Showcase 4?
I broke open a CGC copy. I snapped it over my knee. Every time I read a page, I burn it off, and I just let it go.
Put it into the ether.
Smoke the ashes.
All right, as I already mentioned, I'm on 11 o'clock comics every week with Vince B., David Price, and Wood, and that comes out on either Thursday or Friday.
So buy my salsa.
And Tom Cater's salsa. And every Thursday morning on iFanboy.com, you can read Comic Shots, which is a drink and comic book recommendation.
I like how your drink recommendations have become now to the point where it's just ice and bourbon. Even, like, mixed drinks.
How do you make that? How do you make that?
Bourbon and a cube of ice. That's it. That's not a mixed drink. That's just bourbon.
But Tom, if you...
It's going to become just drink this out of a bottle.
Forget the... But no, I spent extra time this week talking about that if you're going to really drink a good whiskey, the importance of...
Can I do a guest one sometime?
Sure. But
it's going to be Miller High Life. But no, hard hat comics.
Yeah, well, yeah,
If you're going to drink a really nice, expensive whiskey, you're not going to drink it out of just any old glass. Sometimes it's very important to have a crystal whiskey glass that
crystal whiskey glass. Why
the fuck does that matter?
Still voodoo or whatever.
Yeah.
Voodoo.
Yes. Because glass can pick up different flavors.
Crystal whiskey
and
is wonderful.
That's why people drink wine out of crystal is because it doesn't alter the flavor of the wine. Mm-hmm. Same thing with bourbon. If you drink out of a crystal.
My guest one is going to be Miller High Life and like Fantastic Four Essential Volume 3. Just some hard hat comics and hard hat drinks.
There you go.
Here's Wide Wake.
All right.
What are you doing?
How come milk is so much colder when you drink it out of a tin cup?
I don't drink milk.
Big fan.
You don't drink milk?
Mm-mm.
You got them big bones, though.
Yeah, I drank a lot of milk as a kid. Now I just drink bourbon.
He's got like the Popeye kind of exoskeleton happening.
I think you chase pregnant women down and just
All right. On that note,
crystal,
I'd like to thank everyone for listening, and thank everyone for sitting in. Mr. Burnham, Mr. Suntress, Mr. Gators, Mr. Bryant, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week with another full-length episode. In the meantime.
In between time.
Thank you. We'll be everywhere in.
Trademark.
And around comics.
We're going to get back top of the stack from that sandwich shop.
Meanwhile.
Mid-level managers that we heard about. Some mulatto girl shot him in the mouth and left him in the hotel.
In the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.